I have a little story, ordinary person. It's my father, I'll just tell you in brief. And he actually, after retirement, started working for the Cancer Society in India. And as he was started working, he found there was no cancer hospital in North India. And so people either had to go 1,000 miles away or they had to wait 6 months to get radiation. And once you're diagnosed with cancer, if you have to wait 6 months for radiation, you'll be dead. So he said, okay, I'm going to build a cancer hospital. He had no experience. He had no money. And he went talked to some company and they gave him 2 acres of land. And he said, oh, I have land. I'm going to start construction. So he started construction. He didn't have any money in his bank. And people were telling him, are you foolish? You know, you're going to build a hospital with no money. He said, I'm going to do it. So he started construction. He started talking to people for donations and doing some fundraisers. And so slowly the money was trickling in. Suddenly they ran out of money and the contractor started calling him. You know, we need payment. We're not going to continue construction. So much stress. And one day the contractor calls him. He says, I need 2 tons of steel. You know, 2 tons is a lot. 2 tons of steel, which is worth several thousands of dollars, you know. And if I don't get this steel by tomorrow, the construction will stop. And once it stops, all the labor will go away. Then I don't know when we can start. So he was wondering what to do. He had no money in the bank and the construction has to go on. So he had gone to visit the embassy, German embassy. He comes out of the embassy and there was this Sikh, this Sardarji, standing outside a car. And he tells him, are you KK Mehta? He says, yeah. He said, how do you know me? My father didn't know the guy. He says, are you building a hospital? My father says, yeah, I'm building a hospital. Do you need 2 tons of steel? My father said, yeah, I need 2 tons. This is a true story. He said, how do you know that I need 2 tons of steel? He says, never mind. Here's my card. And that's the address of my godown. Send your truck tomorrow and you can pick up 2 tons of steel. And that guy just took off, got in his car and left. And my father sent the truck and they said, yeah, we have instructions. And so he was given the 2 tons of steel. And he said, payment? He said, no, payment has been taken. So what these stories tell us, that the Lord is constantly available for his devotees. You do his work. And my father, of course, was not taking any payment, was doing it as a community service. So when you do this kind of work for him, he is there. Yoga kshema vahamyaham. He says, I provide you with what you have and I maintain what you, once you possess it. That is our problem. You know, one is I don't get what I have, or I get it, and how to maintain it. Like you earn money. Okay, money is very good. But then how to maintain it? You know, I put it in the stocks and the stock goes down, and then I buy a house and the house foreclose, you know, the house values go down, it's upside down. So he says, I take care of you. You do not have to worry. You just keep on doing your work. Dedicated to me, do it as my service, constantly remember me, and live a life of discipline, live a life of self-control. Then I take responsibility for whatever you need in this world. So you don't have to worry. Then I become your general manager. I take care of your life. I run your life the way it should. And constantly he is there taking care of us. So this is from 2 levels. You know, one is I'm working in the world, and the second one is I am constantly remembering the Lord. And for constantly remembering the Lord, I remember a beautiful verse in the 10th chapter. It says, the ones who constantly work with their mind tuned towards me and who serve me with love, they not only love me, but they love the whole world, then I give them the knowledge. You know, people say, I want to realize, I want to know God, I want to realize him. So he says, you just dedicate your actions to me, you work, do my work with love, constantly remember me, then it becomes my responsibility to give you self-realization or whatever you need. You want that? Then dadami buddhi yogantam, then I give them that knowledge, yena mam upayantite. That's how then they can approach me, they can come close to me. They can know me. So the idea is that one should dedicate one's activities to the Lord, work with total devotion and remember him, and then leave the rest to him. One, you really don't need to worry. And we worry so much, you know, what's going to happen next year? What's going to happen after retirement? What's going to happen when I turn 80? Don't worry. Just live in the present. Do your best. Because anyway, by worrying, you're not getting anything. See, you do what is right. Do the best. And then leave the rest to him. You know, they say, do your best and leave the rest to him. So do what is right. Live in the present. And then everything will be taken care of. There is one more meaning of Ananya. I'll spend 2 minutes and then we can open it to discussion. Ananya means no other. So we said no other means I'm thinking of the Lord and give him, make him the most important thing in my life. And everything else is secondary, you know, my family, my work. Yeah, they are all necessary, but he is my most important goal. But another meaning Swamiji in his book says Ananya means that he and I are not separate. It's not another. It is me. Ananya means other. Ananya means not other. Means God and I are one. And last week also we had talked a little bit about it. That what do we mean by God and I are one? You know, that he and I are, and I am he and he is me. You know, the teacher says, Tattvam asi, you are that. And then I say, I am that. So how can I, this miserable little creature, you know, living in Bakersfield, this small little person, how can I be that infinite Lord of the whole universe who controls everything from here up to the planets and stars and everything? So they say that only way you can do that is when the I disappears and the ego disappears. I like to give an example. Now a wave, you know, a wave is created by the ocean. So ocean creates the waves. So the wave is created. It stays up for a while. So the wave might be writing his autobiography. You know, I was a small wave, but with all my effort, and I ate up all the other small waves, and I became a giant wave. And I became the largest wave in the ocean. There had never been as big a wave as I was. So he's writing his autobiography, just as we write my autobiography. You know, I was an ordinary person, and then how I became the greatest business person or the greatest sportsman. So he's writing his autobiography. I am the greatest wave that was. But slowly then what happens? Oh my God, what is happening? I'm going down, down, down. And the wave starts falling. And same thing for a person. And a wave lives for maybe 30 seconds. I may live for 60 or 70 years, but the idea is the same. I write my autobiography. I was the greatest, you know, industrialist and businessman and sportsman. But the time comes when ultimately you have to go downhill. And then your body starts getting old and your, you know, mental faculties go away and all those things go away. So then it says that as long as the wave thinks itself to be a wave, then it will say, I am rising and then I am now falling and I am going to die. But if the wave thinks I am water, you know, I am the ocean. I am the water, I am the ocean. Temporarily, I have taken the form of a wave, and the wave will rise, and then it will merge back into the ocean. And so once the wave thinks, I am the ocean, I have now come up as a wave, and then once the wave form ends, I'll merge back into the ocean. I am the ocean. I was the ocean. And when I became a wave, I am still the ocean. And when the wave ends, I will still remain the ocean, and which is true. It is the ocean water which came up as a wave. So if the wave thinks itself to be a wave, then definitely he will be happy when I'm rising and sad when I'm falling. So similarly for a human being, if you think yourself to be this ordinary human being, this body, mind and intellect, then obviously when the body is doing well, I'll be very happy. You know, I won the Olympics. And then, you know, like Muhammad Ali, you know, he was the heavyweight champion of the world. And now he has so much brain damage from all the boxing that he's like a vegetable. So if you think yourself to be the body, then there will be a time when you will be on top of the world and there will be a time you will be going down. Same thing if you think yourself to be the mind and then you identify with your emotions. One day I'm happy, one day I'm unhappy, you know, success and failure. So if you think yourself to be the body, mind, and intellect, then you will suffer because this will not live forever. Like the wave, it will stay for a while and go down. So it says, Ananya, say, I am not separate from him. I am him. And actually, every cell in our body is made up of that consciousness, you know, because he alone was, and from him, the whole world was created. So every cell of my body is illumined by him. Everything that I have is all him. So he and I are never separate. It is only our ignorance, our foolishness, our vasanas, that selfishness, that takes us away from him into the world. And I think I am this body, mind, and intellect. And I need these objects, emotions, and thoughts to keep myself happy. But if I say I am the consciousness, who at this moment is occupying this role, is playing this role of Anil or Arun or Diana or whatever role I am playing, is a part that has been given to me by the divine director, and he and I are one. I am never separate. Actually, we are not separate from him. That's what they are saying. We are all floating in this sea of consciousness, in this ocean of Godhood. And every cell is strengthened, is nourished, is illumined by him and him alone. So he and I are never separate. We are that consciousness. And so live with that idea, ananya, that he and I are never separate. I am that, and no matter what happens to my body, no matter what happens to my mind, no matter what happens to my intellect, stay with that firm belief that I am that. And these great saints could do that, and that's why they could endure all kinds of sufferings. You look in Mirabai's life, in Tukaram's life, in Narasimha Mehta, all of them, in all these Sikh gurus, how many problems they had, you know, from the Muslims. But they were able to cheerfully go through them because they had understood that they are that consciousness. So ananya means no other. I am not other. He and I are not other. It's not that I am here and God is somewhere. He and I are one. And that can only happen when the ego disappears. See, as long as I have this ego that I can do it, I don't need your help, God. God says, okay, you can do it. Okay, go ahead. Try, you know, and then when you have failure, then you say, oh God, please help me. So they say right from the beginning itself, just work as his servant, work as his agent, constantly remember him. And remember, he's not far away. He's there in my heart, sitting in as the life. He's there illuminating. So with that attitude, when you work in the world, then such a person becomes a great instrument of the Lord. And when he serves the world, then such a person can, you know, that's why Christ, you know, millions of billions of Christians still remember him. Buddha, Shankaracharya, Swami Chinmayananda, hundreds and thousands of followers throughout the world. Why? Because these people gave up their ego, identified with him, became one with him, and then served the world, constantly remembering him, and lived a life of self-control. So that's why this three things one should remember. Think about him constantly, work for him with love, and live a life of self-control. And then there is nothing more you need in this world. So that's why I said this particular verse gives us the highest knowledge and how to live and apply this knowledge in the world. So that's why this verse, a lot of the great scholars of the Gita have said that this verse is the highest or the best. And at least for me personally, I again and again try to remember. So I would recommend everybody to memorize this, study the meaning, and then when you're faced with situations, remember that, because that he is there to take care of me. I don't have to worry. Yoga kshema vaham yaham. That is a very, very powerful line. And it is like a written contract. Like God has written a contract and signed it. He says, you take care of me. You do my work. Then I take care of you. So it's a black and white. It's a completely signed contract. And he has given us a written guarantee. It's like a company gives you 20, you know, what is that? Nowadays they have 5 years, 60,000 mile guarantee. That the car will be taken care of. Anything goes wrong with the car, we'll bring it to us, we'll take care of it. So here he says, anything goes wrong with your life, you bring yourself to me, I will take care of that. So there is no better guarantee that I can think of. So it's a beautiful verse. There's a lot more we can talk, but we'd like to open it for comments. No, obviously we have to do it, but he will provide the, so that you are able to do that. You know, he will, if ever need money, you need help, he will send somebody. Say you are desperate and you need help, he will send a person to help. So obviously you have to do your work, but he is behind you. And ultimately he is the one doing it. But in crisis, in problems, he will be there. And whatever you need, you will get. Well, I think, first of all, you know, desires are vasanas, or our tendencies. Now, first of all, they say that you should substitute your negative desires with positive desires. Instead of desiring for me, myself, and I, you know, or my family, I should start asking for the world. You know, like we say, may everybody be happy. You know, we chant our prayer at the end, Sarve Bhavantu Sukhina. So I start desiring for happiness for all. And I start that I should not only work for myself, but I should share what I have with others. So what you are doing is you are expanding your desires. Instead of just working for me and my family, I'm working for the city of Bakersfield, or I'm working for my church, or I'm working for the nation, or I'm working for the world, like these great saints. So what you are doing is you are purifying your desires. But there is still a desire. Even to desire to serve the world is a desire. That I want to clean the city of Bakersfield, you know, or I want to paint my church, or, you know, whatever. Those are also. But so they say, if instead of negative desires, you start substituting positive desires. May I, instead of anger, may I have love, you know, the prayer of Saint Francis. So you start asking for positive things, but it should be an unselfish, that instead of asking for myself, I am now working for the benefit of all. But ultimately, even that desire to serve or help, still there is a little bit of an ego there, that I am serving, I am helping. So even that little ego should disappear, where the person becomes just, where the I completely disappears. And even the idea that I'm serving or helping goes away, because it is a spontaneous outpouring of service. But even that desire, he's not serving out of a desire. It is coming spontaneously, like a flower. He's not saying, I am desiring that the world smell good. No. The flower's nature is to spread perfume, to make the, you know, to spread beauty and fragrance. You know, the flower looks so pretty and spreads. So the flower does not have a desire. If the flower had a desire, then it would say, I'm only going to give fragrance in the city where people can see me. But if it's out in the forest, there is nobody watching, you say, why should I show my beauty and my fragrance? Let me keep it. No. The flower doesn't do it out of a desire to serve. The flower does it because it's its spontaneous nature to spread fragrance. And wherever it is, it does it. Whether anybody sees it or not, anybody appreciates it or not, anybody praises the flower or not, the flower, it's its nature. So in a saint, it is his or her nature to spontaneously serve the world. Even the desire to serve, it goes beyond that. But yeah, to accomplish something, you need some drive. And that's what we even tell our children, that you need to have a desire to do well. You need to be successful. And it is required, but ultimately even that little I should disappear. And that can only happen through right knowledge. Right. But, you know, if you think about it, I have also thought about it a lot. And it may, I don't know, that's my understanding, it may be totally wrong. But Jesus in his lifetime was able to help certain number of people. But by that sacrifice, people are so much affected by that Christianity spread so fast after. And for the spread of Christianity, maybe that sacrifice was necessary. Maybe it was required because the knowledge, the ignorance was so strong. You know, these knowledge and wrong beliefs and wrong ideas and human sacrifice and all kinds of wrong knowledge. And it was so deeply entrenched. For Christianity to grow and spread, maybe that sacrifice was necessary. Because even till today, people remember his sacrifice and get inspired by that. So everybody has to die. I know, you know, and it was a horrible, you know, it was a horrible way for him to, and I'm not, you know, defending that. But that expedited the growth of Christianity in the world. So maybe there is a divine purpose in everything that happens. And we should look at it that way, that it is his, you know, it is ultimately the Lord himself who is, it is his plan for whatever happens in this world. So maybe that was, I have thought about it. Maybe it's not the right answer, but that's my understanding of what, why it happened. Right. But I think first of all, it was the people who did it, you know, who were ignorant. And number two, I think Jesus was way beyond that. Jesus was so much identified with the consciousness that for him it was not even a punishment. He was way beyond that. For the saints, once they have gone beyond this body identification, then body for them is just a piece of cloth. It's like you cut, if I have a shirt and somebody cuts it, does it hurt me? No. So they are way beyond that. I think that is another thing. So, you know, you and I think that it was something horrible, but, you know, he was way beyond that. And that's, then these people cheerfully give up their body. They don't have any problem. We have so many examples of this Hindu Sikh gurus who were tortured and killed and really badly treated, but they refused to give up their faith. They said, I am not going to convert, you know, to Islam. And it was the same thing. You know, they said you can do anything to my body, but my belief will strong in my God. So I think they are way beyond that, you know, where you and I can't even think about it.
Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kaschid Dukkha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi, Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha, Harihi Om.